It's difficult to begin speaking about a tzaddik such as Reb Zusha, as in many ways he lived beyond the words that we could share in a simple recording. He lived in a world of passion, fervor, and emotion. To try to deliver a small piece of him in 15 minutes can be difficult. But even though, we'll still try. And we say, Lahavdil, Inishmas, Bar Hashem, say, Ilu Pinu Mali Shira Kayam. Even if our mouth was filled of praises for Hashem like the sea, we still wouldn't come close to speaking of Hashem's praises. La'avdil, the same can be said in some small way about all of the tzaddikim, that whatever we can share, we're only getting a glimpse, but whatever glimpse we can get is still valuable. So with that, we can try to connect in some ways to the Rebbe Reb Zusha. Before we begin, I just want to say a thank you to the opportunity to be able to do this. Thank you to Kesha the Tzaddik, a project of today's Yahrzeit. They should be able, with Hashem's help, to continue spreading the light of the Holy Tzaddikim. So the second of Shvat is the Yahrzeit of Reb Meshulam Zusha of Napoli. So he was a Talmud of the second leader of the Hasidic movement, Rav Dov Ber of Mezrich, was a Talmud of Baal Shem Tov, and he was affectionately known by the other Hasidic Rebbes, and as well as his students, as the Rebbe Reb Zusha, term which is given to very few. He's born in the year 1718 to Eliezer Lipa and Miril, were blessed to have two great tzaddikim as children, Rav Elimelech Lezhensk and Reb Zusha of Anipoli. So to understand a little bit about who his parents were, at one point beggars came to the home of Rav Elimelech and Miril and asked if they could bathe and rest before they continue on their journey. So the host heated water for them, and one of the beggars was a leper with wounds all over his skin, all over his body. The other beggars didn't want him to go near them, didn't want anything to do with him. So Miril had pity on him, and she helped him by gathering ointments and bandages for him and whatever else he needed. So the beggar said, since you helped me so devotedly, I'm going to give you a bracha, I'm going to give you a blessing that you should have a son who's like me. You can imagine this is the last thing that Miril wanted to hear. But suddenly, as if they weren't in the house to begin with, the entire group just disappeared out of nowhere. As she understood that these were not just regular beggars, these were not regular people, but this was some group of holy people who were coming. And a year later, after being barren for many years, a son, Elimelech, was born. And 1 year following that was Meshulam Zusha. So Rabbi Eliezer Lipa was a laborer who knew many trades, but he was most known as being a water carrier. So he worked hard and managed to make a decent living. He had four main customers who he would deliver water to, and they would pay him above the regular rate. They liked him, and they would pay him above the regular rate of what somebody would get for carrying water. So one day, as he's going along with his work, the Baal Shem Tov arrived in the town. As before, he had revealed himself, and he traveled as just a simple traveler with a gift for telling stories. So he used to congregate with other laborers, other merchants, and tell them stories from the Gemara and other stories. So he'd speak to them about how much Hashem was pleased with the sincere prayers and the faith of the regular people, of the regular Jews. So once Rabbi Eliezer Lipa was guiding his wagon with its full barrel of water through the center of town, when he spotted his friend and fellow water carrier, Reb Zalman Dov, along with some other men, gathering around the simply dressed man and listening intently, with heads inclined to catch his every word. So his interest sparked. Reb Elezer Lipa went over to join the circle of listeners. Baal Shem Tov was telling the story, relayed in the Gemara, of a wealthy man who lived in the days when the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim still stood. Now this wealthy man was taking a large ox to the Beis HaMikdash to bring as a carbon, a ginormously large animal, and for whatever reason, it decided it was not going to walk any further. It was going to stop there and not go any closer. Everybody was trying to get this ox to move, but nobody could get it. No amount of pushing or prodding could make the animal budge. Now, a poor man who was also on his way, he had a bunch of freshly picked greens in his hand that were to be dinner for him and his family. So now he held these to the muzzle of the ox, and when the animal began to nibble, he took them away. And the animal continued to follow him all the way like this. He led the animal all the way until he got to the Beis HaMikdash. So that night, the owner of the ox had a dream. Now Jimmy heard a voice and said that the sacrifice of that poor man who gave up the bundle of greens that he was bringing to his family, that was going to be their dinner, that was going to be their only thing to eat, was more desirable than your giant ox that you brought. So the question is, how could it be that these few stalks of greens can be compared to a giant animal? So the Baal Shem Tov concluded, said Hashem desires the heart. Any mitzvah a person could do, whether great or small, simple or difficult, is judged by how it's performed. A mitzvah done for Hashem's sake, with great joy and purity of heart, is very precious. Hashem cries out to the angels and says, look at the mitzvah my son or daughter has done. So although he saw that the wealthy man had offered a lot, he was that the poor man had offered more. Now when Rabbi Elazar Lipa, Rabbi Zusha's father, heard this story and heard this teaching from the Baal Shem Tov, he knew no rest. He wanted desperately to be able to do a mitzvah like this, to do a mitzvah like the poor man in the story with pure intentions and a joyful heart. So the week passed, and he didn't have any peace because he still wanted to be able to do such a mitzvah. Now one day, as he was delivering water to one of his customers, he had an idea. So he had four main customers that gave him most of his parnasa, most of his livelihood. And they paid him more than, as we said, more than what was the going rate for a barrel of water. On the other hand, his friend, Rav Zalman Dov, would bring water to the shuls, to the four shuls in the town. And they paid him only half the price for their water. Now, Rav Elazar Lipa said, I will trade my four customers that pay me above the rate for his four shuls, even though they pay him half the rate. That way, I'll have the merit of bringing water for the people in the shul to wash their hands with and to use for other holy purposes. So he said, certainly the mitzvah was more than the profits he would give up. So he went home and told his wife. She was very excited by this idea. Rav Zalman Dov agreed, as he also needed extra income. And only Rabbi Elazar Lipa and his wife knew really what happened, and they were overjoyed at the prospects of their new business. As they hauled the water, they would concentrate on the mitzvah of preparing the water for the congregants to wash their hands with before prayers, and their joy was boundless. Because they understood that, as the Baal Shem Tov taught, that Rachmana Livabai, that Hashem wants your heart. So formerly barren, even though they didn't have children for many years, from these two stories it's said that they happened at a similar time, and from these two stories they were able to have the two children, Rabbi Elimelech of Lezhensk and Rabbi Zusha. Now Rabbi Zusha, as a child, his parents passed away while he was still young, and he was very poor, and they didn't have anybody to teach him. But he desperately wanted to learn Torah. So as he would be sitting and learning something, right, he'd be learning a Gemara, and he'd be trying to understand the Rashi or Tosos, and he couldn't understand it. So he would cry out. He would cry out until he would understand, until the Mechaber of the Sefer himself would explain it to him. I mean, he was trying to learn a Rashi, and he was crying over trying to understand it so much that Rashi himself had Rachmanis and came to teach it to him. So he continued this approach throughout the rest of his life, to be connected in a deeper way. When he was learning, he wasn't just reading words, he wasn't just gaining knowledge in an intellectual sense, but he was connecting to the neshama of the people around him and the neshama of the mechaber of whatever sefer he was learning. One of my favorite stories of Rav Zusha, if we could say such a thing, because every story in some way is my favorite. But one of my favorite stories is that Rav Zusha was learning together by the Magid with the Alter Rebbe and some of the other holy rebbes, and they were learning by the Magid. And he said that said in the name of Yisrael of Rishon that Rav Zusha rarely told over Torahs of the Magid. So he said, why is that? That was his Rebbe. Because he never really made it through an entire shiur. Because at some point in the shiur, he would be so caught up in his emotions, he would be so caught up in the excitement of what they were learning, that he would be asked to leave. And one time they were learning, and the Magid said, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor. Just from those words, Vayomer Hashem, Reb Zusha was overcome by an ecstatic fervor, started shouting, Hashem said, which caused such a commotion that he had to be escorted out of the room. He would stand right outside the room, beating his hands on the wall and just shouting over and over and over, Hashem said, until he would pass out. Now, in addition to that, afterwards, when they would be talking about the teachings, Rav Zusha somehow, even though he was outside the entire time, somehow knew exactly the Torahs that the Magid was bringing down. because he was connected in a certain way that just from hearing Vayomer Hashem, he was able to connect to the entire Torah that the Maggid was bringing down. So in addition, you see from this that the Rebbe Reb Zusha, just his desire, his burning desire, Tzamalacha Nafshi, Kamalacha Basari, to have a connection to Hashem. Another story that portrays this midah is Rav Elimelech Lezhensky and Reb Zusha, the two holy brothers, were traveling together. And they would pose as regular people, simple beggars. They would go around traveling discreetly. Once when they were traveling, the group of people they were with were accused of stealing something. So they all got put in jail together. Now while they're sitting there in jail, the two brothers are learning davening, and shortly after being there, you would think they were just in their base medrash back home and nothing was wrong. Now, as the afternoon went on, the guards placed a pail used as a bathroom inside their stall. Soon after, Rav Elimelech began to cry. So Reb Zusha said, "Why are you crying? Is it because you can't pray?" Rav Elimelech said, "Yes." So Reb Zusha said, But why weep? Don't you know that the same God who commanded you to pray also commanded you not to pray when the room is unfit for prayer? By not praying in this room, you're doing Hashem's will. True, it's not the connection that you sought. It's not the connection you thought you were meant to have. Yet if you truly want divine connection, you'd be happy that Hashem has afforded you the opportunity to obey His law at this time, no matter what it is. So Rabbi Melech, smiling, said, you're right. The feeling of dejection left his heart. And Rabbi Melech and his brother, Reb Zusha, began to dance for joy for the mitzvah of being able to not daven in an inappropriate place. Now the guards heard this commotion and came running, witnessing the two brothers dancing next to this bathroom pail with their long beards and flowing tzitzis. The guards asked the other prisoners what had happened. So they said, "We don't know." They were discussing this pail, and all of a sudden, they started to get to some kind of happy conclusion and began to dance. So the guard said, "If that's right, if they're so happy because of this pail, we'll show them." They promptly removed the pail from the cell, and the holy brothers went back to their learning and davening, just as they were before. So Reb Zusha exemplifies this midah of Shavisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. By Shavisi, it's taught, comes from the Lashon of Shaveh, it is equal. Right, that everything, whatever Hashem puts before me, if Hashem was putting it before me, then I accept it with love. That is how Reb Zusha lived. Whether it was the simcha of being able to daven, or whether it was the simcha of not being able to daven in such a place. Now there was once a story, this comes to how Reb Zusha actually introduced Reb Elimelech to the Maggid. Reb Zusha was connected to the Maggid prior to Reb Elimelech. And one time they're sitting together, and someone came and asked them a question about the knife for Shechita. They were trying by a Suda, and they were going to make the meal, so they had to shecht the chicken. So someone came and they brought them this knife. And he said to the two brothers, he said, "Is this knife good?" Now Reb Elimelech looked at it, and it looked okay to him. And he said, "It was good." Reb Zusha looked at it, and he said, "No. You have to keep working on it." So they went, and then they came back after working on it. And he said, "Now it's good." So Reb Melech didn't notice any difference. To him, it looked the same both times. He said, "So what changed? What do you mean now it's good? Well, what are your standards? What are you looking for?" So Reb Zusha said, "For it to be kosher, I need to see the Shem Havaya. I need to see the Shem Hashem on the knife. If I see Shem Hashem on the knife, I know it's kosher. I know it can be used for preparing food." Now Reb Melech was blown away, and he said, "If you see Shem Havaya on the knife, I want to learn with you." And so they started to learn together, and they were sitting, and they were learning together for a while. After a while of learning together, Reb Melech said, I wish I could do more of this. I wish I could learn more like this." And he said, "If that's what you want, you have to come with me to the Maggid," which he promptly did, and he immediately became a Talmud of his. Now the Maggid had many different students, and when someone would ask him a question that he felt one of them would be able to have a specific angle, a specific way in which to teach it, he would direct the person asking the question towards one of his students. So at times he would send them to the Alter Rebbe, to Reb Elimelech, and oftentimes to Reb Zusha. So someone one time came to the Maggid, and he said, this was a wealthy person who had just lost everything. He lost all his money, he was also having some problems at home, and he was just in a general having a rough time of it. And so the Gemara in Bracha says that a person should thank Hashem for the bad things that happened to him, the same as the good things. So he said, how can that be expected? He says, I understand the Gemara says it, but he asked the Maggid, how can that be expected of me? How is that realistic? So the Maggid said, I want you to go to the man over there who's sweeping the floor, which was Reb Zusha, and go ask him. So this man came to Reb Zusha and he said, I don't understand this Gemara. Can you explain it to me? And Reb Zusha said, I can't help you. I'm not a Gemara scholar. I'm not a Talmud Chacham. I can't help you. Now the man insisted that because the Maggid directed him to Reb Zusha, Reb Zusha must have an answer for him. So Reb Zusha said, listen, I told you I'm not a scholar, but how could I possibly answer your question? I've never had anything bad happen to me. He says, I've never had anything bad happen to me. Now the man looked at Reb Zusha, whose old and tattered clothing testified to extreme poverty. And he clearly then got the answer to his question. I've never had anything bad happen to me. That Reb Zusha had this positivity, this way of seeing Shavisi Hashem Lanegdi Tamid Miloshan Shava, as we said, from seeing that everything that Hashem is doing is for our good. So to Reb Zusha, he probably had the opposite question of how could the Gemara say that something bad could even happen? That would probably be Reb Zusha's question on this. So in Minar Zahav, one of the few Svarim that bring down Torahs from Reb Zusha, on Parsha Shmos, it talks about the Pasuk that's talking about when the Jews are in Mitzrayim. It says, Reisi es oni ami, asher b'mitzrayim v'esakasam shamati mifnei nokshav. Hashem is saying that I saw the pain of my nation in Egypt, and I heard their cries due to their suffering. So Reb Zusha says, what does it mean, the cries because of their suffering? Bifnei nokshav, what does it mean because of their suffering? It seems extra. It could have just said, I saw their cries. Now every word in the Torah is precious. So what does it mean here that I saw their cries, these two extra words? So Reb Zusha says that even when these Jews were in Mitzrayim, even when they were there, they desperately wanted to be besimcha, and they wanted to serve Hashem from a place of happiness. However, bifnei nokshav, almost against their will, as much as they tried, almost against their will, they couldn't. It was just too difficult. It was just too hard for them. So Reb Zusha says that, based on the Gemara, that when someone wants to do something, if someone attempts to do something, and for whatever reason they can't, it's like they did it. So he said, really, they were besimcha. It was only because of their affliction. But be'emes, they were besimcha even there. This is a person teaches and learns based on what's in his heart. And it was clear that in Reb Zusha's heart, he had an obsession with accepting that everything Hashem gives us besimcha, and not to hold himself in any other way. Now, consistent with many of the tzaddikim of the time, Reb Zusha tried hard to hide his greatness, both in his avodas Hashem, as we said in the story above, where he said, "I'm not a Talmud Chacham," which we know is not true, and also in his avoda, both in his learning and in his avoda, he tried to make himself like a regular person. Everybody caught on pretty quickly, but you know, he tried while he could. Now, one of his anhagos, also showing this modesty and humility, was that he refused to refer to himself by saying me, by saying ich. He said, saying me, saying the word ani, is gaivadik. It's not for me. He would say it's not for me. Zusha. He would always refer to himself as the third person. Zusha. He says, ani is ani Hashem aleikeichem. That Hashem can only say ani. But for us, I'm Zusha. Now, just one last story. So, as much as Reb Zusha felt a desire to hide his greatness, he also understood at the same time the power of individualism, the power that each and every single one of us has, that we have our own avoda. Now once, Reb Zusha came to his followers and his eyes were red with tears, and his face was pale with fear, which was not the regular look Reb Zusha had. So he said, Reb Zusha, what's the matter? You look scared. So he said, I had a vision. And I learned, it's a very famous story, he said, I learned that one day the angels will ask me about my life. And they were confused. Talmidim were confused because this is Reb Zusha here. He said, well, what could you possibly be afraid of? What could you possibly be fearful for, a tzaddik like yourself? Now Zusha said, I learned that they're not going to ask me why weren't you like Moshe leading your people out of slavery. And they're not going to ask you why weren't you like Yoshua leading your people into the promised land. So they said, so what are they going to ask you? They're going to say to me, Zusha, there was only one thing that no power in heaven or earth could have prevented you from becoming. They're going to say, Zusha, why weren't you Zusha? And since then, since this story came down, it gave the koach for a Jew not to look left or right, or to look at what somebody else is doing, but to channel the abilities and strength that Hashem has given to every single Jewish man and woman to be the person they were created to be. To say for each of ourselves, when am I going to be the me I'm meant to be? So I want to thank you for coming on this journey with me. To speak about Reb Zusha is always an emotional and raw experience, because that's who he was. And to try to get a little bit of a glimpse of who the tzaddik is, it's truly amazing. And being at a Sion in Anapoli, it felt his energy in a way that no Sfarim or story could. So we should be blessed to be inspired from his passion, love, and positivity into our lives in the greatest way. I want to thank again Kesher the Tzaddik, a project of Yartzeit, for helping people around the world to connect our holy tzaddikim.